Welcome to Modern Manna's Health and Healing Crusade. Through the years, Modern Manna has been dedicated to spreading the message of physical, mental, and spiritual restoration through the gospel of Jesus Christ. From cooking schools and nutritional counseling, to Bella Vita, a lifestyle education home, to crusades featuring world-renowned teachers and healers, Modern Manna has inspired thousands to embrace a new lifestyle that promotes health and the reversal of sickness and disease, resulting in a life filled with joy and peace. Join us now as Howard Lyman presents Mad Cow, Mad World.
Is this mic on? That's four times I've blown it. I'm getting used to it, though. The Lord has His way of humbling us. You know, I have to say, this is the best crusade for me, too. If you notice, I'm a little more relaxed. A tremendous staff around us. How about giving the staff an applause? Well, the next speaker is, he's a great guy. He's funny. He loves life. He's a joy to be around. Howard and I go way back. I mean, years ago, I'll remember the first time that he drove to Lodi and we made a video together at Modern Manna in our makeshift studio. I think Christian might have been there. And then we met and did another video, I think it was in Elk Grove, and we did about three or four radio shows together. He didn't invite me to be on the Oprah Winfrey show with him, though, and may save me a lot of stress. But Howard and I just spoke together in Maryland about 2 weeks ago. We spoke together in Oregon, what, about 3-5 months ago, something like that, And here he is again, and he's a great guy. He's a lot of fun. He loves life. He insists on staying in people's houses when he comes to speak. He insists on it. He loves to do that. He's the author of The Mad Cowboy, an excellent book that tells about his fight. It says, Howard Lyman is fighting not only for our health, but for our nation's sanity as well. He challenges not only mad cows, but a mad system. He's the ex-president of EarthSave. He's the author of Mad Cowboy. And he has come to join and to share with us today. So I want you to give a nice, warm welcome to Howard Lyman, the Mad Cowboy.
Thank you, brother.
If you need this for some reason, it's...
Thank you very much. You should never applaud for somebody until you hear what they have to say. Impossible to get it back. What a terrific time to be alive. Can you imagine? There has never been a time in the history of the earth that there have been fewer mature trees. We have less than 10% of the mature fish left in the world. 75% of all of the topsoil in North America is gone. The list goes on, and I think it's the most exciting time to live in the world because the only thing that has ever changed human behavior is crisis. And we have a crisis. You are here for a reason. I know that many of you have adopted a diet like myself, where you don't eat any animal products, And a lot of your friends and family, they look at you like you're strange. And I will admit that there is a significant problem for the diet that I embrace. You have to attend a lot more funerals than your friends and family. Do you realize that one out of every two Americans that are dying today are dying of one thing, heart disease? The main contributing factors of heart disease, saturated fat and cholesterol. All cholesterol comes from animal products, 100%. No such thing as carrot cholesterol, cabbage cholesterol. You can't even mail order kale cholesterol. The majority of saturated fat in the American diet comes from animal products. As we sit here this afternoon, one out of every three Americans will have cancer. One out of four will die of cancer. Our government today is predicting by mid-century that half of all Americans will die of cancer. Can you understand the fact that there are 100,000 chemical compounds in our environment today that were not in any one human body in 1945? They have found today that having only three carcinogens in a male blood supply will significantly reduce the active sperm. As we're sitting here today, there are 6 billion people on the planet. Every night, 1.25 billion go to bed hungry. At the same time, 1.25 billion of the 6 billion go to bed overweight, obese. We are actually seeing diabetes growing. How do you like that? He comes up and says, I don't want to tell you what to do, but you got to use the handheld. My wife is a lot like that. See, there we go again. If she was here, she would have said, turn on the button. I'm sorry, I'm just an old married man. You know, my wife and I have been married now for over 35 years. Not one time in 35 years have I ever regretted marrying my wife. Now, she can't say that, but I married better than she did. But I will also say that she came with a mother-in-law for 35 years that has been a severe test. In regard to my wife tonight, I will not talk about my mother-in-law. But if you want to come over afterwards, I'm selling videos. I think my mother-in-law was the first person in the United States of America infected with mad cow disease. But mad cow disease is supposed to be terminal. And she's still with us. Oh, well, you know, we are here with the opportunity of deciding whether the Homo sapiens species is going to survive on planet Earth or not. It is in your hands right now. You can sit back and say, oh, well, I can't do anything about it. You know, I'm just one person. Or you can look at it and say, wait a minute, God did not build junk. I am here. I have the opportunity to do something. It doesn't mean that you have to do it all, but it definitely means that you have to do something. If you have a wagon that's stuck in the mud, it's almost impossible for one person to go and pull the wagon out of the mud. But if a group of folks get together and each one of them puts some of their ability to getting the wagon out of the mud, every time it comes out. And so I want to talk to you today about making sure we have a future for our children and grandchildren. I want to talk to you about the fact that nothing happens accidentally. That God never lets you bear a burden that is greater than what you can do. You know, I was raised in Montana during the Second World War on a small organic farm. We were poor, but I didn't know we were poor. We ate well. I had a pair of shoes, a pair of Levi's, and two shirts. What more could you ask for? Now, my parents, they couldn't hire any help, and we had a dairy, and so my mother and father, they were milking cows. That meant that my grandparents raised my two sisters, my brother, and myself. Now, back then, daycare is considerably different than it is today. No swing slides or Lego blocks. Back then, daycare was working in the garden. My first job was to be in the garden picking ladybugs and putting them into a jar, not to kill them, but to count them, because the more ladybugs in the garden, the healthier the garden was. I thought it was the Garden of Eden. I fell in love with growing, with birds and trees, living soil. Only thing in my life I ever wanted to be was a farmer. And so for 12 years I could go to school. I didn't have to do anything but party and play football because I knew I was going to be a farmer. My parents owned a farm. And I will tell you, I had a good time going to school. Never one time in 12 years did I ever take a book home. I will never forget my senior year. They came to me and they said, "Lyman, you're going to graduate." Almost had the big one right there. And if you think I wasn't surprised about graduating, can you imagine what it was like for my instructors? "Lyman's going to graduate?" But I figured that out. They looked at it and they said, "This guy is so dumb that if we don't graduate him, he may come back." They didn't want to take a chance on that. So I graduated. I went home. I was going to be a farmer. I went to that farm. That farm was a business to be run. I didn't have the tools to run a business. I was dumber than a post. No, I didn't let that bother me any. I did what most good red-blooded American youth 12 years ago into school don't learn anything. I immediately went on to the university. Aha, there's a few of you out here too, yeah. I went to Montana State University because I wanted to be an agribusinessman. Now, I couldn't spell agribusiness, but I knew that's what I wanted to be. I learned about herbicides, pesticides, hormones, and medication. I soaked up that information like a sponge. I learned a thing that was called better living through chemistry. Wow. I couldn't hardly wait to get home to that one-horse farm and turn it into an agribusiness. I got a degree in agriculture from Montana State University. I went home and I saw my father and I said, "Move over, Pop. I'm going to take this one-horse farm and turn it into an agribusiness." And he looked at me and he said, "What in the world is that?" And I said, "Man, didn't you ever hear of better living through chemistry?" He said, "No, our job is to work with nature." I said, "Oh, that's old-fashioned. My great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, they were organic farmers. I was a chemical junkie." My father, he looked at me and he said, "You are absolutely, totally wrong. Our job is to work with nature." I said, "Out of my way. Watch my smoke." I turned that farm into an agribusiness. Over a period of time, I turned it into an operation where I had 7,000 head of cattle, 12,000 acres of crop, 30 employees. I can't tell you what a thrill it was the first time I wrote a check for $1 million. and it didn't bounce. And I thought, man, I have arrived. I'm the Donald Trump of agriculture. And just when I was on top of the world, just when I thought I was Farmer of the Year, I got a wake-up call. I ended up paralyzed from the waist down. My doctor, he said to me, he said, you have a tumor on your spinal cord. If that tumor is on the inside of the cord, you have less than one chance in a million you will ever walk again. If you have the odds of one in a million, they're saying to you, hey, sucker, pick out the wheelchair you like. You're going to be in it the rest of your life. I'm in the hospital laying flat on my back, and a lot of things are going through my mind. It's not about owning 7 combines at $100,000 a piece, or 20 tractors, or 30 trucks. What keeps going through my mind is why I became a farmer, birds and trees and living soil. I'm buying over $100,000 worth of chemicals a year. I see the birds die, the trees die. I see the soil change. And I had to admit myself for the first time in my life, I was the problem, not the solution. I spent some time with the Lord that night. It would have been easy to say, God, let me walk again. I'll be a sterling individual. But he didn't do that. I said, Lord, no matter what, whether I'll ever walk again or not, I'll spend the rest of my life trying to get that farm back to what it was when I was a kid, when we had birds and trees and living soil. They came in and took me up and operated on me for 12 hours. I stand in front of you tonight. I have no bone on the back of part of my spinal column. And sure enough, the tumor was on the inside of the cord. They split the covering on the cord. Not only was it on the inside, it was under the cord. They couldn't lift the cord up to get to the tumor. All they could do was pick a nerve and cut it. Hope the tumor was attached like a fish on a line, and they picked one, they cut it, and they took out a tumor the size of my thumb. I woke up in intensive care, and the nurse was saying to me, Mr. Lyman, you have to move up in the bed. When I went in to that operation, I knew that if I said to the nurse, how was the operation? I knew she would say, oh, it was great. Everything was fine. If I talked to my doctor, I knew he was going to say, hey, we did everything correct. But I knew that when I went in, I couldn't feel the foot of the bed. And so when I woke up in intensive care, the first thing I wanted to do was to put my feet on the foot of the bed and see if I could feel the foot of the bed. And the nurse was saying to me, Mr. Lyman, you have to move up in the bed. I will never forget what I said to her. I said, there will never be a day like that. I can feel the foot of the bed. I was in intensive care with a person that was dying of kidney failure, and there I was with the most euphoric feeling I've ever had in my life, because I could feel the foot of the bed, and I watched this individual little by little all day die. And here I am, one of the greatest opportunities that I may, I don't know, but I may walk again. Well, he died. I walked out of the hospital. I don't think I walked out of the hospital because of the skill of my surgeons. I don't think I walked out of there because of the care of the hospital. I think I walked out of there because of the grace of God. There is never a day from the time I woke up in intensive care until today that when I put my feet on the floor that I don't thank God, because I know that's why I walk again. I came out of the hospital, 7,000 head of cattle, 30 employees. My farm was in financial trouble. I went and saw my banker, and I said to my banker, I said, you know, I need your help. We need to start farming with nature. And my banker, he reared back in his chair, and he said, what in the world does that mean? And I said, I think we need to become organic farmers. And my banker, he laughed at me, and he said, you think I'm going to lend you money, and you're not going to spend it with my other customers, the chemical dealer, the pharmaceutical dealer, the fertilizer dealer? He said, there will never be a day like that. And so, 1983, I sold my farm, I paid my debts, and I started working with other farmers, not to make the mistake that I did. 1987, I got a call, and they said to me, they said, how would you like to go to Washington, D.C. and work on Capitol Hill? I can remember looking up and saying, oh, thank you, Lord. 535 members of Congress, I just absolutely knew they wanted to do what was right. I went to Washington, D.C. I worked 5 years on Capitol Hill. If you remember nothing else that I say today, I'd like you to remember what I learned 5 years working on Capitol Hill. I learned a thing that was called the golden rule. Them that got the gold make the rules. And I said to my friends, I said, this game is rigged. The deck is marked. We will never win in Washington, D.C. And my friends, they looked at me and they laughed and they said, well, what are you going to do? Go talk to the people? I said, yeah. They said, you're never going to get half of the people to do anything. I said, we don't need half. 80% of the people alive on the planet today are brain dead. They're part of the herd. They're following nose to tail. And when you follow nose to tail, there is only one thing you ever see in front of you. Less than 20% of the people are thinking. Our job is not to convince the herd and what they ought to do. Our job is to get the 20%, the majority of those, to understand why we need to make a change. And when we do that, the herd will follow. We can do that. We must do that. When you look at 70% of all of the grain produced in the United States of America, 70% of it is stuffed down the throats of an animal. At the same time that we have 1.25 billion people going to bed hungry at night, it takes 16 pounds of grain to put 1 pound of meat on your plate. 16 pounds of grain will feed 32 people, or one Rush Limbaugh. Which is the best use of our resources? Now, I have people that come to me and say, wait a minute. It's not all bad feeding meat to Rush. He continues to eat it. He won't be with us very much longer. I have to admit they have a point. I'm not sure that that's the Lord's way, but they do have a point. But when are we going to wake up? When are we going to start feeding people? When are we going to conserve our resources? Can you imagine that 90% of all of the mature fish on the planet today are gone? That there's never been a time that we have fewer mature trees than we have today? That 75% of our topsoil is gone? That it takes 500 years to produce 1 inch of topsoil? We haven't been here long enough to produce 1 inch, and we have already lost 3/4 of what we had? Well, a lot of people think that the task is insurmountable. Who would have ever thought a farm boy, a poor farm boy raised on a farm that got a degree in agriculture, that went home and made all of the mistakes was paralyzed and was given an opportunity to walk again. A farm boy that would have the opportunity to go and impact the world on hundreds of millions of people. In 1990, I heard about a disease in England that was called mad cow disease, bovine spongiform encephalopathy. Now, the first time it was identified was in the early 80s. By 1990, it was an epidemic. They actually took 4.5 million head of cattle in England, destroyed them, incinerated them at 1,100 degrees centigrade, and then stored the ash in World War II blimp hangars because it was still infectious. Can you imagine something incinerated at 1,100 degrees centigrade and you cannot disinfect it? I think God is sending us a message that we need to stop and take a look at our bad habits of grinding up cows and feeding them back to cows. A cow was meant to be an herbivore, not a carnivore, never meant to be a cannibal. But the greed in the world is so great that it is better to make a few more pennies than it is to adhere to God's rules. And so in 1990, I was at the University of Rhode Island, and the first time I stood in front of an audience and I talked to them about mad cow disease, a disease that ends up eating holes in the brain, that from the time you're infected until the symptoms show up, and the symptoms are like Alzheimer's, can be anywhere from 10 to 40 years. 1990, I was talking to people about mad cow disease, and at that time, the people thought I was the one that had holes in my brain because they couldn't believe there'd be a disease like this. And a lot of people laughed at me. But remember, I was given the greatest gift in the world from the Lord to walk again. It wasn't about people laughing at me. I knew I was right. And so I kept talking about it and people kept laughing. 1996, the Minister of Health in England stood in front of Parliament and said, "We no longer can assure the English people that mad cow disease cannot be transferred from cows to humans." The National Cattlemen's Beef Association said it was the exploding powder keg that was heard around the world. Under the Lord's guidance, I happened to be in England at that time. Do you think that was accidental? Do you think that a farm boy from Montana that spent a lifetime raising animals, feeding them, and to be in England at the time that the Minister of Health was talking about transferring the disease from animals to humans? I ended up doing 70 press conferences in England in 9 days. I will never forget the hotel I stayed in. They took the breakfast room and turned it into a press gallery. Italian television came and set up their cameras, did an interview with me, left the lights up, took down their camera, and along came CBS. They put their camera up, and I did an interview with Dan Rather, then ABC, NBC, French television. And then I had an interview with BBC. They sent a limo to my hotel to take me down and do an interview on World Service Tonight. I walked out of my hotel and there's a big black limousine sitting there and a guy in a blue suit and a limo driver's hat, he jumps out and he opens the door for me. I'm a farm boy. I told him, I said, "If you ever do that again, I'll break your arm." he took me down to BBC, and I'm talking to the producer, and I said to him, I said, wow, BBC, how many stations is this on? And he said, well, I don't know, but it's in 200 countries. 200 countries? He said, yeah, a few thousand stations. I went from being a farm boy to a celebrity just like that. And after doing an hour on World Service Tonight in 200 countries, I walked out the door because I had an interview with BBC television. My limo was waiting for me. Needless to say, the driver did not open the door for me. I got in and BBC television was directly across the street. We did a U-turn. I told him, I said, I could have walked over here. I went and did an interview in 200 countries on BBC television, went back to my hotel, 7 newspapers waiting to interview me. And it was like that for day after day. And finally, I flew back to the United States, to JFK Airport. I was a celebrity. I'm walking down the runway, and over the loudspeaker I heard, Howard Lyman, pick up a white paging telephone. Well, being a celebrity, I looked to my entourage. I was alone. I picked up the phone. It was Oprah Winfrey. And Oprah said, we want to do a show that's called Dangerous Food. Could it happen here? If we send you a ticket, would you fly to Chicago and go on television in front of a few million people? Well, being a celebrity, I did not jump at that opportunity. I waited 4 or 5 seconds and said yes. Oprah sent me a ticket and I flew to Chicago. And I get off of the airplane, I'm walking down the runway, I'm carrying my suit, and here's a guy with a sign, and the sign says Lyman. Oh, I said to him, I said, could you wait a few minutes? I'd like to find somebody with a camera. I'd like to get a picture of this. He said, no. He took me out and put me in a limo. And I am telling you the absolute Lord's truth. That limo was so long, I had a phone to talk to the driver. I was embarrassed. Luckily, the windows were frosted. Nobody could see. They took me down, put me in a suite that was larger than the home that I was raised in with my parents, 2 sisters and a brother. Next morning, I'm up bright and early. I got my suit on. I'm racing down. My limo is waiting for me, and I go and meet Oprah Winfrey for the first time. Oprah came up to me, and she said, you know, I saw the movie Babe 5 times. I will never again eat pork. And I looked up and said, Lord, this is going to be a good day. Well, I'm in the green room. Every one of you guys, if you're ever on television in front of millions of people, it's your wife's responsibility to call you in the green room and tell you exactly what to say. I'm in the green room, the phone rings, it's my wife, and she told me what to say. Well, they come and get me, take me out, and put me on the stage. To the right of me, a grandmother from England whose granddaughter's dying of the human form of mad cow disease. To the left of me, a guy from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. I'm sitting on the stage, I'm thinking about what my wife told me. She said to me, she said, remember, don't say anything stupid. Well, I'm sitting there thinking about this. Does that sentence have a comma in it or not? But before I could figure it out, here came Oprah Winfrey. She came out and said, here's a man who believes within 10 years, we could have a disease that would make AIDS look like the common cold. And I said, absolutely. Oprah said, that's a strong statement. I said, Oprah, We have 100,000 cows a year, fine at night, dead in the morning. We round them up, grind them up, turn them into feed, feed them back to other cows. Then we go out and take roadkill, deer, elk, possum, raccoons. We scrape them up, we grind them up, we feed them back to cows. And then we take euthanized pets, dogs and cats, full of chemicals that were used to kill them. City of Los Angeles alone, 200 tons of dogs and cats a month, ground up, turned into feed, and fed back to our pets or our food animals. Now, I'm telling you, Oprah's eyes are as big as saucers. And I looked up and said, thank you, Lord, we're on the right track. Now, Oprah, she turns around and looks at the guy from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and she said, Dr. Weber, are we feeding cows to cows? I'll never forget what he had to say. He said, a limited amount of that going on. Near as I could tell, 90% of all the cattle fed in factory feedlots in America are eating the remains of other animals. And then Oprah, doggone her, the next thing out of her mouth, she got me sued. She said, that just stops me cold. I will never again eat a burger. Hey. Now, she didn't say to the millions of people watching, you shouldn't eat a burger. She never said the meat's infected. She just said, that stops me cold. I will never again eat a burger. Now, we were taping that show. On that show, I called for the fact that we should quit feeding animals to cows. I knew that when I went on that show, 13 states had a thing that was called a food disparagement law, that it's against the law to say something you knew to be false about a perishable commodity. I didn't say anything I knew to be false. Every word I said on that show, I truly believed to be true. We were taping it. It took about 2 hours. When we got done taping it, I walked up to Oprah and I said to her, I said, hey, Oprah, give me 10 minutes. I'll get you off of chicken. She looked at me and said, only one animal a day. Well, I went about my business. I knew that I hadn't said anything that I believed to be false. I was not worried about being sued under the food disparagement law. And several weeks later, I got a call from a national news magazine said, do you realize that you're being sued along with Oprah Winfrey, Harpo Production, by a group of Texas cattlemen? I said, no. Can I put you on hold? I put them on hold. I raced into my library. I inventoried my vegetarian cookbooks. I knew those cattlemen wanted those cookbooks bad. I went back and said, I can't talk to you now. I'm going to put in a call to Oprah. I called, left a message for Oprah, and I said, hey, Oprah, if we lose this suit, you got to throw in the money. I'm going to put up my vegetarian cookbooks. Well, believe it or not, before we ended up going to Amarillo, Texas, USDA and FDA did exactly what I called for. They banned the feeding of cows, sheep, and goats back to cows, sheep, and goats. I thought, man, we're going to go to Amarillo, Texas. Yeah. Now, Amarillo, Texas is not the end of the world, but it is clearly visible from there. If you're going to give the world an enema, you take the hose to Amarillo. Well, I thought, sure, that we'd go to Amarillo. The judge, a 72-year-old lady, a tough old heifer, I thought, sure, she was going to pick up the hammer, slap it down, and dismiss the case. And little did I realize that 25% of all the cattle that are fed for human consumption in North America come from around Amarillo, Texas. The largest employer in Amarillo is a slaughter facility that's killing cows. Bumper stickers all over town said the only mad cow in Texas is named Oprah. I knew we were in trouble. I said to my lawyer, I said, we need a change of venue. Well, we went and saw the judge. And we said, Your Honor, we'd like a change of venue. She picked up the hammer, slapped it down, and said, motion denied. Bring in the jury pool. 140 people. You never saw so many hats, boots, and belt buckles in all your life. I leaned over to my lawyer and I said to him, I said, we better write the appeal. I think we have less than one chance in a million that we're ever going to win here. I'm back in my lawyer's office. And he looked at me and he said, you know, the plaintiff's attorneys are down in the bar right now laughing that there are not 12 people in the state of Texas that could be put on a jury to find a vegetarian not liable. He said, they're going to call you to the stand tomorrow. The first question they're going to ask you is they're going to ask you, are you a vegetarian? I said, I can answer that. He said, you better or we will lose. Sure enough, the next day I'm on the stand. The plaintiff's attorney, he's looking at the jury. He's giggling, he's laughing, and he says, Mr. Lyman, I can't hardly say it. He said, Mr. Lyman, is it not true that you are a vegetarian? And I looked at the jury and said, I will not apologize for that that has saved my life. The jury is sitting there nodding their head, and never again in that trial of 6 weeks did they ever ask me if I was a vegetarian. But I will tell you that they asked me every other thing that you can imagine. And they said to me, they said, Mr. Lyman, has anybody ever think that you're irrational? I said, yes. I looked over at my lawyer. He's sitting there saying, no, no, no. The plaintiff's attorney, he thinks he's found the key to the Gordian knot. And he said, who? I said, my wife. The jury is sitting over there saying, been there, done that. Well, 6 weeks in that courtroom, finally, Oprah, Harpo Production, and myself, with a jury that was absolutely steeped in the culture of the cattle, they found that we were not liable. The cattlemen could not believe that. They could not believe it. The cattlemen immediately appealed it to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. In 1 year, in front of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, we get a unanimous panel decision out of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals that said Oprah, Harpo Production, and myself were not liable. And then they published an opinion that said everything that Lyman said on that show was true, and the truth is not actionable. Now the cattlemen, they couldn't stand that. They asked for a rehearing. It was denied. And then the cattlemen went 40 miles up the road and they filed exactly the same cause of action in state court. Not being from the state of Texas, thank the Lord, I moved it from state court to federal court. They appealed that. Remember, we did the show with Oprah in April of 1996. On the 22nd of August of the year 2002, the judge finally threw the case out with prejudice, which meant they could not refile it. Over 6 years in court, feeding lawyers for telling the truth, we ended up being exonerated because we told the truth to the American people. Now you stop and think about it. The Lord works in mysterious ways. There was never one person in that courtroom that had fed more cattle than I had, baled more hay, been in more blizzards, pulled more calves, sewn up more prolapses, and so they couldn't say to me, "But you don't understand." The Oprah show, there were a few million people that saw that show. But when those cattlemen sued us, over 200 million people in North America knew about that issue. Do you think the Lord didn't know what he was doing? Well, here I am, on record, back in 1990, that says, I think we have mad cow disease in North America. That's 0.0005%. That's like taking a blind man and asking him to find a needle in a haystack. I believe that we have a government plan which is basically don't look, don't find. But remember, we have over 5 million people in the United States of America that are being diagnosed as having Alzheimer's. The symptoms for mad cow disease in humans and Alzheimer's are almost identical. Every study that I've ever seen of people that have died of dementia, when they remove their brain, put it under the microscope, the only way you can tell, between 5 and 13% of them really had the human form of mad cow disease. Let's just say that only 10% of the people being diagnosed with Alzheimer's really have the human form of mad cow disease, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. That means that we have over 500,000 people in the United States that have that disease, which is 100% terminal, that is incubated in the human body anywhere from 10 to 40 years. The man that won the Nobel Prize, Dr. Stanley Prusiner, was over in England, where they have killed over 4.5 million head of cattle and incinerated them, stored the ash. He said he thought every person in England should be tested for the human form of mad cow disease. I think it's here. And lo and behold, in January, the end of January 2003, Canada confirmed a case of mad cow disease. But the amazing thing was, they never told anybody about it until the middle of May. Can you imagine? Every animal that goes to slaughter, every mature animal in the European Union that goes to slaughter is tested for mad cow disease that night, and they have the results the next morning. And in Canada, they test the animal in January, and they don't have the results that they're willing to publish until May. The United States immediately puts a ban on that we cannot import cattle from England. 80% of the cattle in Alberta that are slaughtered come to the United States. And so we banned the cattle. But remember, some of the good friends of the administration had bought cattle in Canada, and with the embargo, they couldn't slaughter them. And so there they were, stuck with the cattle, and they got on the phone, talked to USDA, and said, "Oh, pretty please, let us kill these animals. We will transgress no more." And even after the ban went in place, they allowed the packers to kill those animals, put them into the food chain in the United States, even though we don't have any idea how many of those animals have the disease. There are over 200,000 cattle in the United States that are called downers, animals that are fine at night and dead in the morning. Every one of those animals should be tested, because those are the prime suspects for having mad cow disease, but do you realize all we do is collect them, grind them up, turn them into feed, and now we can't feed them to cows, so we turn around and feed them to pigs, chickens, horses, turkeys. Even though we know we can transfer the disease from one animal to the other, that you can get it in chicken and fish and zoo animals. You ever ask yourself, are we not in trouble? Do you realize that a hamburger in the United States of America has the potential to have the remains of 1,000 different animals in each burger? Here we have the United States of America, where over 60% of the people in the United States of America are either overweight or obese. 60% overweight or obese. A burger is anywhere from 40 to 60% good old greasy yellow fat. A hot dog. 80% of a hot dog is good old greasy yellow fat, along with the lips, snouts, and anything else they can scrape up off of the floor. And then they add red food dye that will give rats cancer. But don't worry about it. It'll do the same for you. Isn't it about time? Isn't it about time that we stop and take a look at what's happening? Isn't it about time that we come to a gathering like this and we have the opportunity to go over and buy some books and tapes and videos and take them home and try and help our friends and neighbors? Do you remember, I came from Montana. Montana is not the hotbed of vegetarianism. My hometown newspaper put my picture on the front page and said, Montana's most famous vegetarian. I picked up the phone and I called him up and I said, why don't you tell it the way it is? Montana's only vegetarian. They said, oh no, we got one of you kind of guys here at the newspaper, so we know there are two. But you know, Montana, I had 10 friends that we used to get together. We were all in the same business. We were about the same age. Out of my 10 friends, I'm the only one that hasn't had cancer, heart disease, or died. And 6 out of my 10 friends have already died. It's about time that we look at the fact that this is no more about standing back and saying, oh, well, someday they may learn. Look at what we're doing to our kids. You know, I saw a thing in the paper today that said 75% of the schools in the United States of America have soda machines that they are selling this sugar water to our kids. Do you realize there are 12 teaspoons of sugar in one 12-ounce can? Do you know why there's not more than 12? It's because they can't keep it in solution and they don't want people drinking it and seeing the sugar on the bottom. The average consumption of sugar by teenagers in the United States today is 32 teaspoons of sugar a day. 32. And you wonder why we're treating kids for ADD? Wondering why they're climbing the walls? Ask yourself, when you went to school, was it that way? Did you see anybody then going back to a 7-Eleven getting a 32-ounce Big Gulp that has 32 teaspoons of sugar in it? It is getting so bad that we have to wake up. We have to realize this is not just about I'm going to know the right thing. This is about going out and walking our talk. Now you walk up to somebody and you say to them, let me tell you what you want to eat. You can see their eyes roll up. You can hear their ears slam shut. They don't want to hear what you have to say. This is about living your life until somebody comes up and taps you on the shoulder and says, are you one of those V people? And when that happens, you have a 35-second window of opportunity of telling them why. Why they ought to be eating from the plant kingdom. If you don't believe this is true, open the Bible, read Genesis, and it says my people will eat from the garden. Only McDonald's believe that hamburgers come on trees. We were given dominion over the animals. We also have dominion over our children. We should not be eating our children any more than we should be eating the animals. So let's commit ourselves today to becoming part of the solution, not part of the problem. I want to tell you a story in closing. I want to tell you about a man that had the greatest impact in the world on who won the Civil War. And he wasn't even an American. He happened to be a slave ship captain. A slave ship captain that was hauling slaves from Africa to the United States. Year after year, they would fill the ship up with slaves and a lot of them would die, but it was so profitable they made money. And lo and behold, he ended up on the ocean in a terrible storm and they thought the ship was going to go down. And he stopped and he looked up and he said to the Lord, he said, Lord, save me, save my ship. I will never again haul slaves. The ship survived. The guy's name was John Newton. And on the way back to England, he wrote a poem called Amazing Grace. Once I was blind, but now I see. That poem turned into a song and became so popular in England that they outlawed slavery in all of the British Commonwealth. And so in the American Civil War, when the South wanted England to come on board, the bureaucrats, the politicians, they wanted to do that because they wanted the cotton from the South. But the English people would not allow it to happen because they would not support a country that embraced slavery. John Newton, without England's help, the South was destined to lose. John Newton wrote a song that is as popular today as it was back then. Once I was blind, but now I see. We're here at this crusade. We have the opportunity to open our eyes. We have the opportunity to open our hearts. We have the opportunity to become a vessel for taking this information and spreading it far and wide. Can you imagine what the thousands of people here can do? Do you think the Lord has you here for no reason? He sent you here that when they open the market, that you are going to come over and buy a copy of my book. Oh. I just thought I'd check and see whether you were still awake. There is some terrific information that's over there. If we are going to save our children and grandchildren, it has to start with you. Each and every one of us can do more tomorrow than what we did today. Join with me. Let's save the future before it's too late. Thank you very much.
Howard Lyman, the Mad Cowboy. Thank you. I have just four short announcements. One of our LCD projectors blew its bulb, and we don't have an extra one. If there's anyone here from a church or know where you can get one of these projectors that we could use for a day, we would certainly appreciate it. Something with high lumens, at least 2,000 or 2,000s or above. There will be a book signing tonight after Charlotte Gerson's presentation this evening by Howard Lyman, the Mad Cowboy, and we have plenty of copies of his books there for you. Tremendous book. I love it. Charlotte Gerson, tremendous presentation tonight. She'll hold you spellbound. As I said, she's one of my teachers. She's taught me a lot about natural healing. There are sign-up sheets in the back of the room. If you want to get mail from Modern Manna Ministries, make sure you print clearly your name, your address, etc. And check us out at www.modernmanna.org to be on our free e-newsletter. I'll let you in on a little secret. Very soon, Modern Manna is going to release its brand new professional website, and you'll know that and you'll see it. We've had it redone and it's exquisite. And so make sure you tell everyone about www.modernmanna.org. We'll see you tonight. Have a great evening and a great meal. Bye-bye.
We hope you have enjoyed this presentation and have gained a blessing from the information contained in it. From all of us here at Modern Manna Ministries, may God richly bless you.